Welcome back. This is Chapter 11, Traps and Nonsense. Kate and Constance were two steps behind Sticky when he fell through the drapeweed. If he hadn't been the least bit farther away, there would have been no saving him. Nor would Sticky have stood a chance had it been any other children lunging to grab him. As it was, with a desperate dive onto her belly, Kate barely managed to snatch Sticky's hand before it disappeared. Their troubles were far from over. Kate's dive to the ground had set Constance tumbling over her shoulders. In a flash, she caught the girl's ankle before she, too, disappeared. But then, the weight of her two catches began to drag Kate forward into the hole. Rainey? Kate called through gritted teeth. A little help? Rainey rushed over and grabbed Kate's legs. Hauling Sticky and Constance to safety was an arduous, tricky business, and an unpleasant one too, as Constance complained the whole time of Sticky's elbow in her ribs. But eventually, Rainey and Kate had dragged them back up onto solid ground, where all four now lay on their backs, looking up at the sky and panting from the exertion. Apparently, drapeweed isn't perfectly harmless after all, Constance said. Sticky looked at her. He wanted to be irritated, but found that he was so relieved to be alive, he could only smile. In fact, it appears to be carnivorous, Kate said. Before long, they were all chuckling. The danger was past, and somehow the excitement had helped them shed a little of their anxiety. Glancing at one another with satisfied smiles, as if to say, "We did it, didn't we? Together, we did it." They rose and dusted themselves off. They gathered near the hole in the drapeweed, though not too near, and tried to peer in. All they could see was darkness and trailing tendrils, and even these were slowly being covered up. The flexible stems and shoots thrust aside by Sticky's fall were stiffening and spreading back into place. Like a footprint in springy grass, the hole would soon disappear entirely. Kate crawled to the edge of the hole, pushed aside some tendrils, and shone her flashlight down into the darkness. It's a pit, 20 feet deep. She glanced back at Sticky. Deep enough to break your legs. Sticky wiped his forehead. Thanks for the grab, Kate. I do like my legs.
I would thank you too, said Constance, except I wouldn't have fallen into the hole if you hadn't dived. So my thank you and your apology cancel out.
Kate laughed. Whatever, Constance. As long as I don't have to apologize, I suppose. The children stood by the drapeweed for some time, pondering their discovery. No one could think of any good reason for it to be there. Why had someone gone to the trouble of covering that dangerous hole? There's only one answer I can think of, Rainey said at last. A trap? Kate said. Rainey nodded.
Oh, goody, Constance said. Now there's traps, too.
But why is it here? Sticky wondered. What is it for?
Kate snorted. Really, Sticky, you amaze me. A trap is for catching things, or people. Sticky didn't answer. He was tiptoeing back to the path, careful of every step. The children made it to their rooms almost exactly when the executives were supposed to come for them. It was probably a bad idea to keep executives waiting, Sticky had said. But it was they, not the executives, who waited. When half an hour had passed with no sign of Jilson, Constance suddenly sang out,
Now we have waited for 30 consecutive minutes to see some old dirty executive. 30 long minutes I could have been sleeping, but she doesn't find her appointments worth keeping.
Kate was startled.
What are you, a cuckoo clock poet? Cut it out. She might be right outside the door.
Jilson was, in fact, right outside the door. But to Kate's relief, she entered with no more than her previous bossiness, no hint of indignation. The walls and doors must be very solid, Kate reflected. It would be difficult to eavesdrop through them. This would be to the children's advantage when they had secret discussions.
but it would also make spying on others more difficult, a fact that irritated Kate, though not nearly as much as when Gilson said, "Hurry up now, Squirts. I can't wait on you all day." Kate bit her tongue. "We're ready." "You better be," said Gilson. Then her face clouded. "Hey, why isn't your television on? Is it broken?"
We just turned it off just now," Kate lied.
"Why would you do that?" Kate blinked.
"Because we were leaving the room?"
"Oh," Gilson said again, considering. Finally, she grunted. "Well, whatever floats your boat."
They joined Jackson and the boys in the corridor. The executives had a sheet of paper with them now that listed the children's names, and after checking to be sure each child was accounted for, they still didn't bother with handshakes. They began the institute tour. After a quick pass through the dormitory, nothing but student quarters and bathrooms, they walked outside, where Gilson told them they were free to roam anywhere they wished, so long as they kept to the paths.
"Too dangerous off the paths," she said. "The island's covered with abandoned mine shafts."
The children exchanged glances.
"They're from the early days, when Mr. Curtin built the institute," Gilson explained. "Before Mr. Curtin brought the island, people said there was nothing here but rocks. What they didn't know was what kind of rocks. Turns out the whole island was rich in precious minerals. Mr. Curtin knew this. He built the bridge, brought in mining equipment and workers, a whole colony of workers. Their dormitory was the first building constructed. It's now the student dormitory."
Like a proper tour guide, Gilson pointed to the student dormitory right in front of them, even though they knew what it was. Dutifully, the children looked and nodded.
"Mr. Curtin became one of the richest men in the world," Gilson went on with a proud smile. "And can you guess how he used his wealth?"
"Doubtful," Jackson murmured.
"He built the institute?" Rainey offered. Jackson looked surprised.
"Exactly," said Gilson. "A free school, as you know. Doesn't cost a dime to come here. All thanks to Mr. Curtin's generosity. He asks nothing in return, mind you. Not even attention. Mr. Curtin is every bit as reclusive as he is generous. Never leaves the institute. Never takes a vacation. Too much important work to do, he says, broadening the minds of the next generation."
The executives led them across the rock garden onto the large central plaza, which lay fronted and flanked by the institute's massive stone buildings. As they walked, Jackson identified the buildings in turn.
"Starting from your right, you see your dorm, of course. You remember your dorm, don't you? And just to the left of it, that one with the tower, is the Institute Control Building. It houses Mr. Curtin's office, the guard and recruiter quarters, and the executive suites. You'll never have reason to go there unless Mr. Curtin calls you to his office, or unless you become executives yourselves someday."
Jackson looked the children over and shook his head, as if he rather doubted that possibility.
"Anyway," he went on, "next to the Institute Control Building, you see the cafeteria right in front of us here, and then the classroom building. That building set off to the side there is the Best of Health Center, which is what we call the infirmary, and the building way up on that path is the gym. The gym is always open, except when it's closed. And there you have it. Those are all the Institute buildings."
"What about that one?" Rainey asked, pointing to a rooftop just visible over the classroom building. Jackson scowled.
"I was getting to that, Raynaud. That's the helpers' barracks. You know what barracks are, right? It's where the helpers live."
"Helpers?
Do you not have eyes?" Jackson scoffed. "Haven't you seen the grown-ups in white uniforms scuttling about, sweeping walkways and picking up trash and whatnot?"
Rainey nodded. He couldn't have known they were called helpers, of course, but he chose not to point this out.
"The helpers do the maintenance," Gilson explained, "and the cleaning, the laundry, the cooking, all the unimportant tasks, you know.
Now come along, Squirts, and don't drag your feet. There's still a lot to see inside.
The executives bustled them into the classroom building, which had seemed large enough from the outside, but was perfectly enormous within. Brightly lit corridors branched out from the entrance in all directions, with Constance struggling to keep up and looking very unhappy about it. The children were led down corridor after corridor. At last, they stopped in one that was lined on both sides with classroom doors.
"Now, there are an awful lot of corridors in this building," said Gilson.
"And not just this building," Jackson put in. "Some connect to the helpers' barracks and the cafeteria, which have their own corridors, obviously."
"Obviously," Gilson said. "So the next thing you shrubs need to know is how to find your way around. Now don't fret. It seems confusing, but it isn't confusing, which happens to be an important principle you'll learn here at the Institute."
"It isn't confusing," said Constance, who was turning round and round, clearly confused.
"Look beneath your feet," Jackson said.
"See that stripe of yellow tiles? Just keep to the corridors with yellow tiles on the floor, and you can't get lost."
Obediently, the children looked at the floor. Rainey had noticed the yellow tiles, but hadn't thought anything of them. He'd assumed they were decorative. He must remember not to assume anything about this place. Gilson put a finger to her lips and drew the children over to peek through the window of one of the doors. A gangly executive stood in front of about 30 attentive young students, leading them in a memorization exercise.
"The free market must always be completely free. The free market must be controlled in certain cases. The free market must be free enough to control its freedom in certain cases. The free market must have enough control to free itself in certain cases. The free market..."
"What on earth are they talking about?" Sticky asked.
"Oh, that's just the free market drill," said Jackson. "Very basic stuff. You'll pick it up in no time."
"Sounds like nonsense to me," said Constance. "On a certain level, everything sounds like nonsense, doesn't it?" Gilson said as they continued the tour. "Precisely the kind of lesson you'll learn at the Institute. Take the word food, for example. Ask yourself, why do we call it that? It's an odd-sounding word, isn't it? Food. It could easily be considered nonsense, but in fact, it's extremely important. It's the essential stuff of life."
"It still sounds like nonsense," Constance muttered. "And now I'm hungry."
It wasn't just this talk of food that made Constance's mouth water, and the other children's too, for that matter, but the smell of food as well. They were being led into the cafeteria now, a huge, bright room crowded with tables, much like any other cafeteria except for the smells. Drifting in the air were what seemed to be 1,000 delectable scents: grilled hot dogs, hamburgers, and vegetables. Melted cheese, tomato sauce, garlic, sausage, fried fish, baked pies, cinnamon and sugar, apple tarts, and on. Beyond the empty tables, on the other side of a counter, they saw helpers scurrying about in the kitchen, half hidden behind clouds of steam and grill smoke. Kate had her nose in the air like a bloodhound.
"It smells like a bakery, a pizzeria, and a cookout, all at once."
"That's another great thing about the Institute," said Jackson. "The helpers prepare wonderful meals. You can eat anything you want, and as much as you want, too. Just go up and tell them what you'd like. Don't be offended if they don't say anything. Helpers aren't supposed to talk to you unless you ask them a question. Pretty soon, you don't even notice them. I remember when I was a student, I liked to play tricks on them. Nothing they could do about it, you see, because no rule said I couldn't. But now, I hardly pay attention to them, except to keep them in line."
"It sounds like there are no rules here at all," Sticky said.
That's true, George, said Gilson. Virtually none, in fact. You can wear whatever you want, just so long as you have on trousers, shoes, and a shirt. You can bathe as often as you like, or not at all, provided you clean every day in class. You can eat whatever and whenever you want, so long as it's during meal hours in the cafeteria. You're allowed to keep the lights on in your rooms as late as you wish, until 10 o'clock, each night. And you can go wherever you want around the Institute, so long as you keep to the paths and the yellow-tiled corridors.
Actually, Rainey observed, those all sound like rules.
Jackson rolled his icy blue eyes. This is your first day, so I don't expect you to know much, Raynaud. But this is one of the rules of life you'll learn at the Institute. Many things that sound like rules aren't actually rules, and it always sounds as if there are more rules than there really are.
That sounds like two rules I'll learn, Rainey said.
My point exactly. Now come along, everybody. We need to hurry. You're to join the other new arrivals for Mr. Curtin's welcome speech. Constance, stop dawdling. You too, George. Hustle it up.
Would you mind calling me Sticky? The boy asked, hustling it up.
Is Sticky your real name? Asked Jackson.
It's what everybody calls me, Sticky replied.
But is it official? Is there an official document somewhere that declares Sticky to be your official name?
No, but...
Well, if it isn't official, then it can't be real now, can it?
Sticky just stared.
Good boy, George, said Jackson, leading them back toward the classrooms.